You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the record shows that we don't hold Superman responsible. Thanks for stopping by. Tourism is booming here in the Midside. If you enjoy your stay, please tell a friend. And if they need a travel agent, you can refer them to Elliot. As the presidential primaries push forward, Donald Trump hysteria has reached epic proportions. If you're paying attention to the news or social media, it's nearly impossible to avoid frantic statements decrying him as evil and dangerous. Look, I'm no fan of Trump. I think he's a narcissist. I mean, he referred to his penis size during a presidential debate. And there are plenty of philosophical issues I disagree with him on. But can we stop comparing him to Hitler? Doing so undercuts the cultural perception of what true evil is and distracts from the fact that both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are awful candidates as well. Instead of denouncing any one of the three, or all three, as I just did, it's time to focus on figuring out why this election cycle is filled with such poor candidates. So I ask you, is the system broken? Joining me this week via Skype from the home of the system, our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, is the system broken?
I am the establishment, Justin. Yes, of course the system is broken. It's broken. It was broken the moment we decided that individual rights didn't mean anything anymore. But the difference is that the system to me isn't just the system here in Washington. You can't have any government whatsoever that protects rights as long as the people don't want to protect rights. So it's a cultural loss that we have. It's a philosophical loss that we have. And it's a political loss that we have. So we need to fix all of those things, not just one. We're not going to elect better politicians and things are going to get magically better. We have to have better ideas, and then things will get better. So,
right.
Yeah, the system's broken, but it's broken all the way down. It's turtles all the way down, Justin. Broken turtles.
Yeah, the thing that stuck out to me with what you said is you can't fix it by electing politicians. It reminds me of what Adam Carolla always says. Yeah, I beat you to the punch this week.
Wow. Where he says, Tom Brady.
Hey, Justin, Justin, you know what Zack Snyder would say about this? Actually, I don't know what he'd say about this, but, you know.
He keeps his mouth shut about politics.
He'd say it's
not awesome. The thing that stood out to me about what you said, Daniel, is, you know, the Adam Carolla thing where he says, you're hiring bureaucrats to be caretakers of the bureaucracy. Of course they're going to create more bureaucracy.
Yeah, absolutely. Fucking cliche to a hammer. Everything looks like a thing that should be hammered.
Also joining us via Skype from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, do you agree the system is broken?
Oh, yeah. And to springboard off of what Daniel said, to elaborate on the system being broken all the way down, I think there's a myth, especially among libertarians and conservatives, that we're kind of being held hostage by these politicians, that somehow, you know, it's us versus them, which on some level is true because they're a lot worse than the rest of the culture. These politicians, they represent the worst people in the culture, the people who see all of the power they get to have over other people if they join the government and say, oh yeah, I want some of that. I want in on that cookie jar of free money. So it is true that the politicians are worse, but if you want, but I don't think, especially someone like a Republican has no right to complain about, you know, the tyranny of politicians when they subscribe to their own personal tyranny of not wanting to have gay marriage, you know, not wanting to allow people to cross the border freely. that basically the or wanting to have a draft, the Republican Party is absolutely fine with coercion as long as it takes the form of things that they're in favor of. And until we understand that contradiction on both sides of the aisle, it's going to be fucked up.
Preach.
I don't think there's much else to say there. So let's just
I just destroy every subject. Just like after I just have this rant, I'm just like, all right, like fine, we can't say anything now.
So let's then just transition into the news with Daniel G. Richards.
I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. Cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
If we're to believe colleges, the latest threat to America are mini sombreros.
Ay, Dios mío.
So, wait, do they just yes. really fucking hate Speedy Gonzalez?
Yes.
This is just Saturday, a campaign against Speedy.
Yes, indeed. On Saturday, two members of Bowdoin College. It looks like Bo Doin. I'm calling it Bo Doin because that's how it looks.
On
Saturday, two members of Bo Doin College. Never heard of it. Must not be important. On Saturday, two members of Bo Doin College's student government will face impeachment proceedings. What heinous transgression did they commit? Theft, plagiary, sexual assault, this Washington Post article asks. Nope, they attended a party where some guests wore tiny sombreros. 2 weeks ago, some students threw a party for a friend. The email invitation read, quote, the theme is tequila. So do what you want with that. We're not saying it's a fiesta, but we're also not saying that.
Is it like fiesta is like a bad thing or something? Like, we
Apparently.
Have to keep on the DL if it's a fiesta?
Because yeah, the party is the F word.
Yeah. Just because one thing is Hispanic or Spanish doesn't mean all things are Hispanic or Spanish, James. God, get out of the hills.
The hills of white privilege.
The hills of cultural appropriation with my little sombreros, tequila, and salsa. My pico de gallo cultural appropriation salsa.
Don't forget your avocados from Mexico.
Right.
From Mexico. Yeah. The invitation, and this is my favorite part of the article, sent by a student of Colombian descent, which may or may not be relevant here. I love parentheticals in journalism. They're my favorite thing ever. I'll tell you my favorite parenthetical in a moment. It'll be an Adam Carolla moment. The invitation advertised games, music, cups, and, quote, other things that are conducive to a fun night. Those other things included miniature sombreros several inches in diameter. And when photos of attendees wearing those mini sombreros showed up on social media, students and administrators went ballistic. Students were put on social probation. Hosts have been kicked out of their dorms. And now two students who were on the student government are facing impeachment over this.
Are we sure mini sombrero is not a reference or not a euphemism for penis? Because they were several inches in diameter, and people got upset when pictures of them were posted on social media.
They were wearing penises? Is that what you're... like on their head, or...?
Well, there was a lot of pegging going
like,
on.
Like on their lapel?
Back to
like
pegging.
On their penis lapel?
On their foreheads.
They were a
unicorn? Yeah, it's just a big unicorn party. Unicorn pegging. It's the new thing.
That's awkward. The school newspaper editorialized about attendees' lack of basic empathy and placed the event in the context of two other controversially themed parties in the past 2 years, a gangster party at which some students showed up with cornrows and shock gold chains, and a racially insensitive Thanksgiving party, where some dressed as pilgrims and Native Americans.
I would just like to point out that if at a gangster party somebody dressed up like an Italian mobster, nobody would bat an eye. So.
Yes, indeed. And it'd be actually historically more accurate. So, there you go.
It's fucking racist to say it's historically accurate that we were the gangsters, Daniel. Fuck you, I'm offended.
So this is supposed to be cultural, this is supposed to be cultural appropriation, which is supposed, which I've heard about before, but I don't quite understand why it's supposed to be bad. Like, what is up with that? What is, what the hell is going on?
That means we can't do shit that we weren't raised in. So basically, I'm forced my entire life to eat shepherd's pie and be angry about things for no reason.
Right, so like basically
so far,
they're telling you-
So good.
So basically, like if you participate in someone else's culture by drinking tequila, doing Russian dancing, you know, eating salsa, or you know, whatever, then like you're a racist because you are choosing to participate in another race's culture.
Yes, this all is- of that except the Russian thing because Russians are considered white now, so you can do anything Russian.
Right, okay, right. I can make fun of that as much as I want.
So you could have a Russian-themed party if you want, and then just slowly poison everyone with plutonium who you don't
right.
like.
And everyone would drink white Russians.
Yes, yeah, so here is the problem I have with cultural appropriation and then also the charges of racial insensitivity. You can't have both. Either it's racially insensitive and we did something that is derogatory to your culture, or we appropriated your cultural things and did them despite the fact that we don't understand them and we are white. You can't have both. You don't get both insults. Either we appropriated it or it was racially insensitive.
Isn't cultural appropriation racially insensitive because you're disrespecting the culture by acting like you can participate in it when you can't because you're a stupid white person?
No, because my point is you can't appropriate something that is not the actual thing. If it's racially insensitive to drink tequila and wear mini sombreros, that means that that's not actually part of their culture. It's a stereotype. So how could we have appropriated something that's not actually part of their culture?
Oh, I see what
because
you're saying.
Because we're two. Boom.
Now that I'm thinking about this, I actually explicitly do this for the sake of culturally appropriating. In my room, I have a Muslim prayer rug. I'm not kidding. I have a Muslim prayer rug and it's pointed diagonally in the room. And so when people ask, like, what is it pointed at? I say Vegas. Because I actually did work it out on a map to point this rug towards Vegas. And I have this Muslim prayer rug. This was actually given to me by a Muslim I once knew. And like, I listened to a lot of her like bullcrap when I was like exploring a lot of different philosophies. And she gave this to me trying to make me into a Muslim. And so I keep this rug and I have it pointed towards Vegas as a sort of symbol of my victory over religion and to just lampoon their culture. So I explicitly do this. I just realized.
So I thought Vegas was Mecca. So
it's my
Mecca. I wasn't confused at all.
So did this relationship with her, did it end with a big bang?
What? Oh God.
Hilarious.
Also, it sounds like she was trying to recruit you to be a suicide bomber. I don't think she was trying to make you Muslim. Are you sure she wasn't?
Yeah, probably.
ISIS?
I think it was a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
This is Justin still calls my fiance Fiza sleeper cell. So it's been 5 years.
Not my fault to put a jihad on you.
It's a good song. Someone look that up. Here's another thing about cultural appropriation. How far do you take this back? Are like African cultures appropriating logic because a white Grecian guy named Aristotle came up with the principles of it?
No, you only take like, it as far back as it damns white people.
Like,
well,
you
I've actually, I've actually seen logic attacked as being a white male construct because a white male named Aristotle is the one who identified its principles.
I know. So, therefore, all non-white people can't use logic. And so far, so good.
Well,
phrase from earlier.
I'm glad you made that joke because I was going to do that too.
Yeah, at least according to this article, Jesus Christ.
Well,
the reaction to this is nearly unbelievable to me still. Like, I understand how nonsensical we are with the social justice bullshit, but for the president to call these acts of bias and want to discipline these students is insane. And the fact that the Bowdoin student government unanimously adopted a statement of solidarity, which says, quote, "Stand by all students who were injured and affected by the incident, and recommended that administrators create a safe space for those students who have been or feel specifically targeted." That language is as if they took the mini sombreros and tried to jam it down people's throats quite literally and suffocate them with the tiny hat.
You know where Bowdoin is, right?
Bowdoin? No, I don't know where that is.
It's in Maine. You realize this is the stuff I grew up with, right?
Well, yeah, now I know why you're so fucked up.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Basically,
man,
the college you went to sounds like it was when you were there, it was where the rest of our culture kind of is. The colleges are always a few years ahead in terms of all of this stuff.
Well, that's the thing, like, Daniel, I'm kind of shocked right now, like, with what James is saying, I guess it's true, because I'm kind of shocked that, like, you're this, like, you're like, oh my god, this is so, like, this is normal to me, like, this is a normal day at college to me. I'm just like, oh yeah, like, okay, whatever.
God, no wonder you need to see. You know what? See another therapist. See two or three.
This is
like
why
just have a baker's dozen therapists on call.
This is why I was isolated undergrad, because I walked around listening to my CD player until they released an iPod, and then I just listened to my iPod the whole time, and I ate by myself and everything because I was terrified of offending everyone, especially women.
And you were listening to that rapper who is culturally appropriating the African music, Eminem.
That's true. I was,
oh God,
I was silently protesting. It was funny.
Yes. Well, I'd like to culturally appropriate a chicken sandwich about now. Bring me the Chick-fil-A, especially after this story. Chick-fil-A.
Don't bring your cell phone.
That's right. Ditch your phone, get free ice cream. Mm-hmm. The restaurant chain is offering customers in almost 150 stores, quote, a cell phone coop, which is a box for families to ditch their devices while they chow down on waffle fries in store. Brad Williams, not the little person comedian, but a Chick-fil-A operator in Suwanee, Georgia, who's
awesome
responsible for the coop.
Also Brad Williams, though. Multiple things. Like, he moonlights as the Chick-fil-A guy here.
Also a very successful tiny person comedian. Why is midget offensive and little person is not?
Thank you. That's my argument. I think you got that from me.
Well, I don't understand. Like, they prefer to be called little people.
Doesn't midget just mean little person?
Yes. Well, there you go.
Yeah, but little person is more... Just... Look, little person is more offensive because it's like they're not a real person. They're a little person.
Well, it's also vague because there's all kinds of little people. There's dwarves. There's kids. There's children.
Don't.
There's
I know Justin. Where this is going. I know the punchline. Stop. Stop.
Well, Brad Williams, not little person. Quote, "We really want our restaurant to provide a sense of community for our customers, where family and friends can come together and share quality time with one another. The challenge is completely taken off. We have families who aren't successful the first time." Really? "And come back to try again. We even have people asking to take the boxes home with them. Our whole community is talking about it." So, gentlemen, when next time you go to Chick-fil-A, you putting the phone in the box?
Fuck no.
What do I get?
Ice cream not worth it for you?
I mean, I'm not eating ice cream right now, but...
a shake or something. I don't know.
All right, well, okay. I mean, here's the deal. Is like, I... Part of this, I totally understand, like, people are sick of, you know, you playing with your cell phone while you're trying to talk to them. But the thing is that, like, and I get that, but a lot of these pushes against cell phones, I feel like they're too anti-cell phone and not enough anti just rude behavior in general. To me, it's not the cell phone's fault. And the way that they cast these sorts of movements clearly indicates to me that it's something about the cell phone itself that actually is bothering people. You see what I'm saying?
Like the technology?
Yeah, it seems somehow, I wouldn't claim to know yet what exactly they're against, like what they're against implicitly here and not telling us, but it feels like there's more to this than meets the eye.
It's because they're Transformers.
It's a philosophy in disguise.
By the way, the phrase, playing with your cell phone, starts off rather interesting.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say takes something a minute, else, James. I really did.
Takes a minute for me to know where you're going.
Yeah.
When you're sitting in the restaurant playing with your cell phone.
Yeah, I was like, oh. You were going to different Chick-fil-A's than I went to. You went to the Chick-fil-A's that are okay with gay marriage.
Would be the ones in California, though. Yeah.
Exactly.
Where they're not Chick-fil-A. Never mind.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
No, the problem with the cell phone, I think, that people have, I mean, first of all, it's concrete, right? It's something you can see. And it's a communication device. So when people are looking at it instead of you, you assume they're communicating with other people, so you take it personally. To again refer to Adam Carolla, this is something he talks about. We're on the road, we all have a tendency to take things personally, where we say, hey, that guy cut me off on purpose. That's about me, when it's just someone cutting you off. And it's the same thing with people on the phone. They're not, like, intentionally ignoring you. They're just used to the being on the phone all the time, or they're process addicted. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. But I think to answer your question, James, it's people take it personally, where they see the phone as a threat to them, because they see it as, this is other people, this is the other person wanting to deal with other people instead of me.
I guess I'll be that guy on the podcast. Didn't think I would be that guy. I like this a bit. So, like, I'm not anti-cell phone. I like cell phones. They help me do my job. But you are having a meal, and the phone thing is focused on families. It's not, I mean, I think if you or Justin went in there by yourselves and said, I'm going to give you my phone, give me free ice cream, they'd be like, get out, loner.
Yeah, right.
Go eat with some other humans. So go socialize somewhere.
That's so unjust.
Because also, what would you do? What would you do, by the way, if you put your phone in the box and just stare at the wall? That's exciting. I'm just chewing my sandwich. Yeah.
As somebody who spent a lot of time alone before cell phones were invented, yes.
Boy, that wall's mighty interesting. No, but it's a family thing. It's, you have your family's there. Have a conversation with them. Ask them how they're doing. As the infomercials in California used to say, talking to your kids is the number one way to learn what they're up to. That was a real commercial in California.
I thought I was there. Following them.
On Facebook?
Following them.
Twitter?
Following them.
Literally following them.
This is why I can never have kids.
I guess the
ankle bracelet, Billy.
I guess the thing with Chick-fil-A is that it's a family restaurant, and it's not exactly when I eat, I'm always in a hurry. Basically, when I eat, I have 30 other things going on, so I need my cell phone to do all sorts of business with one hand while chowing down with the other hand, while plowing their Chick-fil-A sandwich into the other hand. And I just noticed, like, Chick-fil-A, they're not in a hurry. Like, they're almost like not even a fast food restaurant. Cause I'm one of the most impatient people in the world when it comes to anything other than kids trying to learn something. Anything else, if it takes 3 seconds longer than it's supposed to, I start getting angry. And Chick-fil-A sometimes makes me mad cause they take a lot of time to try and, like, kiss your ass. Like, they gotta fill the soda for you. Like, no, just leave it out there, and I'll just open it up right into my mouth. That's the quickest way to get that soda. That's what I'll do.
Can you just put it in a butt funnel? I will butt funnel it while I'm eating. We can grab both sides, in and out. That's a different restaurant,
yeah.
In and out.
Remember what Ben Franklin used to say, one in the butts were six in the mouth.
I mean,
on that note, feminism.
Why don't you just make a machine that automatically turns it into poop? That way you don't even have to digest it.
Well, you do have to, you know, it doesn't work that way.
And James, this is the point I want to make about what you just said. You've clearly never lived in the South, and you should never live in the South.
I did live in Virginia near D.C., but that doesn't
matter. Nobody wants that Virginia. Everyone in the North says Virginia's in the South, and everyone in the South says Virginia's in the North. Nobody wants Virginia.
Bastard child of Virginia.
The forgotten middle child of the United States East Coast.
Yes, all Virginia. So, feminism, like I was saying. This is on the Reason.com hit and run blog, which is getting better and better.
Right, so we have two
University of Oregon
articles here. Two feminist theory articles here.
Okay, did we really need to, do we need the meta commentary about the show structure?
Deadpool.
People will figure out when we're talking about two feminist articles that we have, in fact, had two feminist articles.
Deadpool.
Thank you. University of Oregon study on feminizing glaciers just might make you root for Trump. It's a good headline.
What
does gender theory have to do with climate change and the depiction of glaciers in popular culture?
Oh my god.
If this article does not culminate in Titanic, somebody did something wrong.
Near, far, wherever you are. Okay, you can decide for yourself by reading what must be the least essential paper ever written, according to this article. The paper's title is Glaciers, Gender, and Science - A Feminist Glaciology Framework for Global Environmental Climate Change. The recently published utterly incomprehensible paper was co-authored by a team of historians at the University of Oregon and funded via a grant from the National Science Foundation. This is what I mean when we say that suddenly we have a billion climate scientists on the planet, because that's where the funding is. Do you know how many climate scientists there were pre 1980?
Oh,
like when there was none of this funding? I think it literally was 8 in the world, like climate scientists who studied the climate. Because it wasn't a big fucking deal. No one cared now that there's money there. Anyway. This is rather long, but I think it's very important that I read you the abstract of this paper.
It's absolutely amazing.
Glaciers are key icons of climate change and global environmental change. However, the relationships among gender, science, and glaciers, particularly related to the epistemological questions about the production of glaciological knowledge, remain understudied. This paper thus proposes a feminist glaciological framework with 4 key components. 1, knowledge producers. What? 2, gendered science and knowledge. What? 3, systems of scientific domination.
Here, 4 is the best part. 4 is the best part.
And 4, alternative representations of glaciers.
Oh no, wait, that's not the best part.
Merging feminist post-colonial science studies and feminist political ecology, the feminist glaciology framework generates robust analysis of gender, power, and epistemologies in dynamic social ecological systems, thereby leading to more just and equitable science and human ice interactions.
That's the best part. That's the best part. More just and equitable human and ice interaction. Like, is this a paper about how we treat iced tea and ice cube? Is that what this is?
Although Glacier does sound like a rap artist. That would be, anyway.
Oh, God.
The article goes on to make sure that they are to tell you they are not fucking with you. Like, they had to stop and be like, we're not trolling you. This is not a joke. This is an actual paper. Just an equitable human ice interactions.
I mean, you know what Ice Cube's kid's name is, right? Ice Chip?
I'll chip off the old cube, huh?
Holy crap.
Their minivan's called the Zamboni.
See, Justin, hilarious. You're trying to make jokes about things other than this, but nothing can compare to what we're witnessing here.
It's like, yeah, that's funny.
Nothing's funny after this.
But we could just read the paper. Yeah.
Human
God.
I'm not ice even interaction. Sure. Equitable. What would an unjust human ice interaction look like?
Well, the Titanic, for one.
The middle of this
unjust towards humans.
The middle of this abstract doesn't even make sense. Like, we need a framework with 4 key components. Number 1, knowledge producers. What? Like, I don't know. I mean, we already said this, so I don't even need to. I feel the need to repeat this. Number 2, gendered science and knowledge. Just, it's like, even if they were talking about something real, the abstraction on which they're saying all of this is so extreme that no one would be able to possibly penetrate it with the most giant mental penis you possibly could imagine.
No one's pegging that glacier. That's
exactly.
For sure.
You're saying even Dr. Manhattan couldn't fuck an iceberg? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. He could not. He could not wrap his blue brain around this one. I can tell you that.
I'm in his giant. I'm going to read. Penis.
I'm going to read one more sentence from this. I mean, I won't read the whole paragraph, but the last sentence. It's as if they said, "How many social justice nonsense words and ideas can we fit in one sentence? It's a challenge." And I think this sentence won. Feminist glaciology builds from feminist post-colonial science studies, analyzing not only gender dynamics and situated knowledges, plural, but also alternative knowledges, and folk glaciologies that are generally marginalized through colonialism, imperialism, inequality, unequal power relations, patriarchy, and the domination of Western science. Yes.
I want that to be a band name, by the way. The domination of Western science. That I'd be in that band in a heartbeat.
I like folk glaciologies, though.
See, you know, this, on some level, this article wasn't unprecedented for me, believe it or not. Way back a while ago, let me see, what was the year? I'm looking at the paper right now. The year was... actually it was a while ago, 1994. A physicist, in order to lampoon the liberal arts, some of these liberal arts journals, this physicist wrote a paper, paper also in quotes, called Transgressing the Boundaries. Transgressing the Boundaries Towards a Transformative Hermeneutics of Quantum Gravity. And so basically what this guy did, Alan D. Scull, Department of Physics at New York University, what he did is he wrote a program that used all, and it harkens to this paper, he wrote a program that would use all of these liberal buzzwords, basically, and simply order them in a way that is grammatical. And this goes on for, hold on, let me check, 38 pages. I'm looking at the PDF right now. This goes on for 38 pages of a computer-generated just blast of these words, of just these liberal arts words, or these, like, just, you know, like, you know, colonialism, feminism, Western domination, and only he threw in a few words like quantum gravity and other physics concepts. He sent it to a bunch of journals just to see what would happen, and it got published, and he threw this, and then he came out by saying, like, what he did. Like, all he did was just use a bunch of words that would pander to their biases, basically. It would, the paper is meaningless because it was generated by a computer.
And he's been beloved by modern English departments ever since. How subversive of him.
Yeah, I believe,
yes.
What book is that, Daniel?
The fiction book. What book?
The fiction book that you hate all the time that's basically just
Ulysses?
Gibberish.
Ulysses?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we have, we have another feminist story here. What we had to do is, when you have a story with like the Glacier one that just has peak feminism in it, you have to take a step down from that. Like, you can't go just on to the next story, otherwise you'll get the feminist bends. So this one is... Oh, this one is absurd, but it's slightly less absurd, but in a fun way, so that we can surface and get back to breathing normal air.
To preface my analysis first, to build on what you're saying there, this one is kind of like, after the last article, it's like, yeah, maybe they do kind of have a point.
Exactly. CNN reports, are female emojis sexist and harmful to girls? Yes, written by Kelly Wallace of CNN. Yes, this isn't even like one of those I report nonsense. It is an actual CNN reporter. My girls will think it's a bit more than a little bit ironic that I'm writing a story about emojis, those characters you find throughout text and social media, since they believe I'm the last person on the planet to download them on my phone. Do you download emojis?
Yeah,
you can have like extra emoji keyboards, right?
Yeah, but that's not what she's talking about.
I know, she's wrong. She's old. Fucking
okay.
Old people.
So as an emoji novice, if there is...
appropriating our culture.
Yeah, seriously. Old people.
Yeah.
So as an emoji novice, if there is such an expression, I had no idea what female and male characters were available to choose from until I watched the newest hashtag like a girl video by Always, the creator of sanitary pads. In this latest video, which follows videos in 2014 and 15 that went viral showcasing how a girl's confidence plummets during puberty, girls are asked about the emojis that are available to represent them. Quote, they're all mainly pink. That's pretty much it. There are no girls in the professional emojis unless you count being a bride a profession. So, are emojis sexist because not every single emoji is in every single gender?
Yes, absolutely. I think they should, it should just be banned. It should, I'm not sure what it is, but it should be banned. Just all of it, just ban it.
Do we need a Title IX for emojis? For every male emoji you create, you must also create a female emoji.
Look,
and I don't just mean female. I also mean, cis and bi and the other 900 genders that we now recognize. Justin?
Look, I don't think they're sexist because they don't have feelings. I don't think the people who created them are sexist. I don't think they're harmful to girls. But I do think from an artistic point of view, it's an interesting question to ask whoever made the emojis why they decided to design them like that.
Yeah.
Like, what was the reason? I don't think there was any malice behind it, but it's just sort of like you couldn't put a girl on a bike. You couldn't put a girl playing soccer. Like, why didn't they think that way? You see what I'm saying?
Because
well, isn't there...
Sexist.
See, like, false accusations of sexism aside, Justin, isn't there kind of like an aesthetic... whenever I have an aesthetic question, it's always gonna, like, directed towards Justin, but like, you know, isn't there an aesthetic issue here? There's a reason why most heroes are male in stories is because it's like, all other things being equal, masculinity represents to us the gender that gets shit done, that is the gender that goes out there and manipulates the world, whereas women represents to us, for good or for ill, the gender that, you know, takes care of us, you know, supports us, our, you know, has to do with feelings, and then going back, man is, you know,
feelings
like,
are worthless.
Well, exactly, but it's like a man has to not deal with feelings or a woman has to avoid, you know, working with physical matter, but it's like in our minds, those genders are more conducive, the female gender is more conducive to the feelings and the male gender is more conducive towards manipulation of physical matter. So that's what we think of. So artistically, when you portray, you know, a construction worker, he's a man, a soldier, a man. And unless you have some kind of very specific artistic reason to choose a woman, which you may, but like you need a reason to choose a woman because the default in our minds is that that's a man and that's not sexist. That's just an association we have in our aesthetic picture in our minds.
Well, you've hit on an interesting tension here because the argument that's going to be made against you is that, well, that assumption is a sexist assumption and it's sexism in our society. In our culture, and that we're socialized into accepting those.
Systemic.
Systemic, that's the word I was looking for, thank you. You know what? I do have some sort of sympathy for that. I do think that the value of the different genders, both genders, are understood incorrectly. Something you touch on, actually is in a Gal Gadot interview from today, where she released the interview in Glamour, that came out about Wonder Woman, where she talks about, you know, Wonder Woman's strength. And her strength and the way they went about conceiving her is, you know, it's her heart, it's her caring, and it's her feelings that are her strength. And that lines up with what we talked about with that interview Camille Paglia did before with Salon about the value of mothers to their sons, about caring for them and having them believe in their sons. So I do think there's something about, you know, inherently the way the genders are, but I do think it's misunderstood, and I do think that people don't question enough and they default, because the greatest issue of what you said, James, is what I just said, is we don't take control enough when we do things. Emojis themselves are offensive because, because they say this is your limited way of communicating. Who the fuck is, you know, we're talking, you know, I don't often rant about top-down shit, but who the fuck decided that these were the limited ways we can use pictures icons to communicate with each other? And why did they make these decisions?
I'm going to have to stop you there. Just right there, I'm going to have to stop you. Right where you are. Just halt. Okay. This is not an issue of that. This is a market issue in its entirety. Look, instead of decrying sexism or oppression, a market exists where you can create whatever fucking emojis you want and get them to people. So instead of writing an article going, is this going to corrupt our little girls forever? I need girls to know that they can accomplish anything in their life, which they already fucking do if you're a good fucking parent, and emojis aren't going to change that. Make your own emojis. Make your own emojis and put them in the app store and people can get them. Jesus Christ, people.
Yeah, that's of course the answer to what I was just saying is if other people aren't making good choices and aren't thinking about why they're doing what they're doing, well, there's obviously a hole in the marketplace because they're not thinking it all the way through, which means you can think it through better and do it better. It's just that Apple's making the main emojis that everyone's using right now.
No,
right?
There's like a consortium, like a committee that decides which Unicode emojis are going to be that are recognizable on all phones and all platforms.
And then,
it's not an Apple thing.
And then Apple just has that pack installed automatically on your phone or whatever?
Yeah, all phones can get that. It's a universal thing, like a standard Unicode set for keyboard.
Didn't it come on my phone automatically, like I didn't have to download it?
You don't have to download it, but you have to turn it on.
Oh, I had to turn it on? How do I turn it off?
It's a keyboard setting on your iPhone.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, your emoji keyboard is turned on.
Yeah. So basically, fucking people, and this is the answer to James's question too, and James, that was a great question. It's just fucking think about what you're doing, goddammit, and think about why you're doing it.
Well, if President Lesbian was running for president, she would win in a 30-state landslide, at least according to a recent Pornhub analysis of most watched porn by state. Yes, Lesbian was the most watched porn in 30 states, including most of the big states, New York, California, Texas, Illinois, Florida, etc. And I don't think anyone was really surprised by that, or maybe they were. I don't know. The next most watched category was a variation of relative, i.e. stepmom or stepsister, which won out in Alaska, Washington, Montana, Minnesota, and a few other messed up places. And then a few pockets of ebony in the South, which shouldn't surprise anyone since that's where a huge portion of the African-American population is. And then, of course,
so that's where ebony gives them wood?
Yes. Hilarious. That's a great joke.
Justin is a bad influence on me.
Of course, the state Justin will be moving to very soon, Hawaii, which is number one porn search was Asian.
Wait, is it?
Yes.
Oh, man.
The only state where Asian won.
Man,
and then,
I will move to Hawaii.
I don't know if you looked at this map. Any guess about where, what Rhode Island thought was the number one porn search?
Clams.
Close. MILF! The only state to go the MILF route was Rhode Island.
That's because there's like one dude in Rhode Island.
One dude in Rhode Island and he has a MILF fetish? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And what is with Nebraska? Nebraska, Missouri, Tennessee, and Vermont. Vermont all went cartoon. Cartoon was their number one most searched porn term. Really? I mean, I guess that's less messed up than stepmom and stepsister, but.
Is it?
Alas. Why are you trying to sleep with your stepmom? Or visualize it?
Why are you thinking about that? Cartoon, I totally understand. There's some good anime out there.
On the Brady Bunch.
Incest is not the best.
That's a wholesome American tradition, the Brady Bunch.
It's a wholesome European tradition. I don't know. This came up on the Adam Carolla show, and he asked a very good question. Like, all these terms were bigger than, like, big breasts? Or, like... Like that, all of these beat out that? Like really?
Well, I guess that, that shows you something. It's, you know, sexuality is a, has very particularized aesthetic preferences, not necessarily completely centered on the physical. Like, you know, I want to have a relationship with, you know, someone who, you know, bears a certain relationship to me, you know, my stepsister. Okay. You know what? Never mind. I was trying to make a positive point there, but, you know, just never mind. We'll cut that. We'll cut that out.
I mean, the positive point is for feminism here. What we've learned is in 30 of the states, you can basically make men irrelevant. You can just cut our dicks off. We don't matter, right? Everyone wants lesbians.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get the lesbian thing.
I've never understood the lesbian thing. I mean, I understand it's a fantasy. Like, I understand you don't watch porn and you're like, oh, wow, you know, like, that could be me. But, like, I don't know. I don't get it, because it's like, there are two people who want nothing to do with me because they are interested in the other gender. So I like can't get turned on. Do you
that
know what
just
I'm
means she likes what I like.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm glad this woman is, these women are enjoying themselves, but this is not part, I am not part of this.
You ladies look like you're having fun, but I see there's no room for me in this picture. Yes.
Well, I see there's plenty of room for me, but you don't want it, so.
Maybe it's because like 50% of the people in a normal porno, you're not that interested in looking at. Whereas if it's lesbian, then 100% of the people in the porno, you're interested in looking at.
But that's such base logic, right? Okay, because I'm...
I don't know. That's...
This is the gayest thing I'm probably ever going to say.
All right. Get the clip ready.
In the rare instances I want porn, I want the dude to be good looking too. Because I want romanticized porn. I want two hot people fucking. And I want to go, wow, that's hot people and they're fucking. That's what I want from my porn. I want to see
you. I'm not sexually stimulated by the man in the interaction, though. But if there's two women, it's like, oh, now both are sexually stimulating. Even though, yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, if the man is, you know, pretty fuerte, then it makes it more appealing. But, like, not on a sexual level.
Justin is holding out for the fact that Zack Snyder may or may not have directed some pornos in his lesser known days. And I bet they're fucking epic.
Awesome. Wait,
they're fucking epic.
What do you mean?
Okay.
Yeah. Wasn't 300 porn?
It had some porn in it.
Yeah, a lot of guys in that movie, though. It's more like Elliot's porn.
Leonidas fucking his queen?
Yeah, no, I mean, there was that scene, and then the rest of the time it was naked guys. Just pointing that out.
I was just talking about that one scene.
That you watch over and over again?
Maybe. I'm just saying, I don't know.
One other minor thing about this map, other than the rhetoric of this map, looks like Republicans are going to sweep the next election because lesbian is in red all over the map. I don't know what that means.
All them lesbian watching Republicans.
It's Lynn Cheney. Lynn Cheney's taking over.
According to the lesbian vote, I don't know how that's working. The other interesting discrepancy here is, so like Georgia and Alabama, the number one most searched term was ebony, but in Louisiana it was black.
I noticed that too.
You don't lump those together in your analysis? Those are different things?
The only time I've ever seen black people referred to as ebony is in porn. Is that just me?
There is an entire magazine named Ebony about black people, James.
And they're not fucking each other?
God, I don't know how to top that. Okay.
Well, let's talk.
That's going to be the pull quote for the week on the Midside page. It's a whole magazine named Ebony, and they're not fucking each other? Yeah,
I remember that. You write that down, because I'm having trouble remembering all this shit. Because all I'm thinking about right now is porn directed by Zack Snyder. So let's talk about Zack Snyder. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. To get started here, let's do our reviews for the week. So I'm going to talk about a show, and then James and Daniel are going to talk about a show. I watched on Hulu, on our Hulu Plus ad-free account, which we, again, are not yet sponsored by Hulu. I watched The Real O'Neals, which is, so you know how recently they've been doing, like, Fresh Off the Boat and Black-ish, and they were like, let's do all of these shows about the culture of these minorities. They were like, let's do a show now about the culture of Irish people. Except it's basically about how Irish Catholic people lie and are actually bad people, and about how they're all hypocrites.
So it's the show Shameless?
Yeah, it's like a soft version of that, basically. And it, you know, it took a turn when I realized the main character is a kid who grew up Catholic, and it's all about him coming out of the closet. And then the big quote to take out of this is from the dad saying this to the mom. He says, can't you see we're screwing up our kids with our whole Irish Catholic not talking about things? Which, again, I can sort of identify with, having grown up in a, you know, Catholic environment in the Northeast, but it's like, why do we have to have all these shows nowadays? And sitcoms, which are supposed to be funny, about what makes all these different cultures shitty. It's like we're dealing with our cultural trauma by making all these shows, and it's just not entertaining. It's not well made. It's just sort of like paint by the numbers, whatever. That's my review of The Real O'Neals. So, James, you wanted to talk about the season premiere of Better Call Saul, correct?
Yeah. I always really liked Better Call Saul. Last season was good. I think it's a really, really successful spinoff on House of Cards. It's someone I always found Saul a lot more endearing.
What? I think you meant Breaking Bad.
What?
What?
You said it's Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad. Yeah, dude, Frank Underwood shows up at the end of season one of Better Call Saul. Like, imagine Saul and Frank Underwood together. No, dude.
And he's like, excuse me, I am the one who knocks.
But
he,
you know,
literally does knock, which is the, okay, anyway.
So what I really like about Better Call Saul, and this will have some level of spoilers for the second season, is, but they took a really interesting turn here. Saul is a struggling lawyer, and he finally, the big reason he struggles is because he's been dishonest. He's been a scamster for most of his life. But he finally gets success doing some legitimate lawyering work. He basically finds out about a scam and gets promoted to almost being partner at a law firm to help help on a class action lawsuit. But even then, he still just feels this drive, this need to do dishonest things, because it's like a self-esteem thing for him or something. And what I really liked about this is that it disconnects the idea of evil from the idea of self-interest, because his desire to be evil has nothing to do with his self-interest. It is so self-destructive, and I really liked that portrayal. On the downside, it's not clear why he wants to do this. At least it wasn't clear to me. So that was my impression.
I've not watched any of it, only because I liked Breaking Bad so much that I just thought it would only be a disappointment, but it's not a bad endorsement. It's interesting.
It's not a disappointment. I didn't think Breaking Bad was the best thing ever, so maybe my expectations are lower, but it's a good show. I wish happy shows about good people were made as well as Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says about Vince Gillian, but it probably reveals something about him. And speaking of happy shows about awesome people, you guys both watched all of House of Cards, which just came out like 2 days ago, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Because, you know,
by the way,
the show starts with the dude masturbating in prison, I'm always like, I'm going to keep watching.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what got me through.
Yeah, that scene was bad. But you know what they're doing with that scene is they're playing to the fucking Orange is the New Black nonsense crowd. I see why they did it, but the show actually gets dramatically less naturalistic after that scene. I was actually very worried that the show was taking a horribly naturalistic turn with that directing choice in particular, but I don't think it did. And in fact, there were other points at which they could have gone in that direction, and they explicitly didn't. It was much more stylized, so I appreciated that. So here's the thing. Here's my general review of season 4 of House of Cards, which is, one, nothing could have been worse than season 3 of House of Cards.
Yeah.
So anything was a step up from there. And the show started off more like season 3 of House of Cards. And by the way, the bad thing about season 3 of House of Cards is that it rejects its own sort of core, not premise, but its core heart, if you can call a show about manipulation and evilness having a heart, which is the Underwoods being lockstep to gain power in any way possible, and they destroyed that. Season 3 is all about them separating, and then season 4 starts that way, and you're like, no, I don't want to go through this anymore. Why do they have to be fighting each other? And
why are you
it gets much
Mommy and Daddy?
Exactly. That's not the point of the Underwoods. They are like a unit, and that's kind of the theme of the second half of the season, where they do make up and play nice and start to gain power again because of their unity. And there's this whole thing about going beyond marriage later in the season. So it got better. The problem with the show starting in season 3 and now in season 4 is that the writing is lazy. So it used to be in season 1 and 2 that the plot was intricate and driven by interesting scenarios that fed off of one another that built a house of cards. Oh! Now in season 3 and 4, it's what random, non-expected, huge event can we shove into this to see how the characters are going to react to it?
Yeah.
And that just doesn't work for this intricate political drama. For it to work, it has to be really well structured, and it's just not. It's just throwing bowling balls at pins and seeing what falls and what doesn't.
I found there was a lot of times in this show, like, this is a huge spoiler alert, by the way. Huge spoiler.
Wee,
so,
wee,
right.
Wee.
So, yeah, so, you know.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
He, right before, tell me if you thought this too. Frank Underwood went, right before he gets shot, he has this plan. He has some sort of scheme about something. I don't even remember what it was anymore. And then he gets shot right afterwards. And so it made me think, like, wait, was him getting shot part of the plan? And I'm like, oh no, it was the reporter guy who shot him. So that couldn't have possibly been part of the plan. And then that just trailed off. Did you find yourself under the same illusion?
Yes. And additionally, because I have watched the British version of the show, and this is huge spoiler alerts for that, but there is a plot line in which the prime minister in the British version gets shot, and it is orchestrated. But you can clearly tell that that's not following that plot line because there's no fucking integration that could possibly make it make sense. He has this thing where he's like, well, I've got this plan to deal with Claire. And then suddenly out of nowhere, a reporter who is starting to get his sanity back because he's investigating this case just decides, oh, I'm going to shoot the president.
I don't know. I think they established pretty well that the reporter cracks once Clinton's political rival ends up, you know, being not believing his story, or I'm sorry, Dunbar, Underwood's political rival ends up. That was on purpose, by the way. That I made it sound like that wasn't on purpose. I was trying to just slip that one in there, but. Yeah, when he talks to Dunbar, she isn't gonna roll with him, and that breaks him. Like, oh, I had to suck this dude's dick, literally. I had to do all this shit. Like, I went through all this hell, and now it's all for nothing. I have to just do something. I have to kill him. I understand that. It makes sense to me.
I think you can backwards look at it that way, but I don't think they explicitly did well enough to set it up that he has cracked to the point where he could commit physical violence. This guy is a reporter. This guy is like a journalist. He has no, he's like a, and his whole demeanor is weakling and non-violent and ridiculous.
Well, I don't
think they did a good enough job to pull him off as a guy who could just break and be like a Lee Harvey Oswald kind of assassin. Like it was not believable. The ending was the only thing that was even mildly interesting to me, how they're going to resolve being basically exposed as frauds in the political realm, at least, that they're, going to, create fear. They're going to be the ones that people fear. And that's getting back to the core Underwoods that is so interesting to watch. Certainly not interesting to root for. I don't mean to imply that. But it's interesting to watch. And I don't know. I've stopped giving up hope that the next season is going to be better. I just want a resolution now, and then I'll be done.
I don't have that point in the show.
All right. I have one other thing. The critics for this season are criticizing it for some similar reasons. They think it's a little soap opera-y now. But the one that I saw that I didn't like is there's a critique that's run through Washington Post, New York Times, and one other paper that I saw, which is the show is better if you binge watch it, and they're critiquing it for that. That the show is set up to be binge watched. But that was what it did originally. That's why it broke ground, is it released all 13 episodes simultaneously. And two, the show is written around that model.
Yeah.
The scenes are continuous, basically.
This is critical.
The storyline is continuous. And so I'm just like, what kind of fucking context dropping do you have to do for that to be one of your major critiques of the show? It's written to be binge watched. That is the point of it.
They can't adapt. They're dumb. Whatever.
They're not like the Borg.
Yeah. And speaking of not being able to adapt,
is actually pretty good. Yeah, okay.
Let's move on to a couple of trailers here. The first one I think is not able to adapt. It's not a good adaptation. What did you guys think of the all-female Ghostbusters reboot trailer?
Well, it got a ton of negative feedback on social media. If you look at the upvotes versus downvotes, it's almost 4-1 against. People aren't liking it. I didn't quite find it as bad as people are making it out to be. It is a reboot in a certain sense. There were some funny moments. I didn't think it was too social justice-y or in your face about it being all women. So, I don't know. It was good enough that I'm still interested in seeing it. It wasn't intriguing enough that I'm going to buy opening weekend tickets.
I thought it was just completely shallow. Like, I thought there was no depth to it at all. There was no hint at broader themes or anything. It was just sort of like, here's the scientist. Here's the sassy black chick. Oh, they're fighting ghosts. Isn't that cool? Like,
it's Ghostbusters. What do you want?
There was more going on in the first movie.
The only thing this preview really did for me is it reminded me, like, hey, I want to see the original Ghostbusters again.
But did it, I mean, I agree with you that in the original Ghostbusters movie, there's more going on, and some have argued it's the greatest libertarian movie ever made, by the way. But if you were to go watch the original Ghostbusters trailers, could you pick that up? Like, it's a film about people who fight ghosts for a living.
Sorry,
like,
I'm just used to Batman versus Superman trailers. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you can't hold everything to that standard, Justin. Jesus.
It's funny because on Facebook, somebody asked me what's a trailer with themes in it and what has depth in it, and I sent them the Batman versus Superman trailer, and they laughed at me. So well, I said, enjoy your movie-going experience, and moved on with my life.
They should be pegged by a unicorn. That's what I have to say about
dildo
that.
Dildo on the forehead. Mini sombrero.
That's... a unicock.
The next trailer I'm sure Daniel's excited about because he sent it to us. There was a Finding Dory trailer released, of course, on Ellen. What did you guys think of that trailer? Are you buying or selling this sequel?
James?
I didn't see it. I missed that on the outline. Shit, I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. You failed us once.
To be honest, I did not like Finding Nemo, so I'm just not the right person to ask about this.
Daniel's outnumbered 2-1. I don't get the Finding Nemo thing.
And it's fucking brilliant.
I found Dory annoying, so I can't imagine a whole movie about Dory.
I found everyone very annoying in that movie, and I just wanted it to stop.
That movie is sentimental, it's touching, it's funny, it's well-paced, it's beautifully directed,
okay,
the animation is outstanding, it's groundbreaking, the acting is tremendous, and you're both wrong.
What about this trailer?
This trailer blows. I'm genuinely excited about Finding Dory. This trailer does not get me excited about Finding Dory. The trailer was, I think, geared at getting people who liked all of the inside jokes in Finding Nemo interested in this, and it didn't work for me. Like, I'm interested. I don't want Pixar to rehash things. There's no reason for this to be a rehash of the first movie. It could be a brand new story, and that's what I was excited about. But Pixar doesn't seem to be going in that direction, at least not with this trailer. There are a couple new characters, but it's mostly all the exact same jokes. Not excited about that. I hope the next trailer is much better than this, because right now, to be frank, Disney Animation Studios is kicking Pixar's ass. Now, obviously, they are owned by the same parent company, so everyone's going to win out in money at the end of the day. But I just don't like to see that, because Pixar has created some of the best stories in modern times.
Speaking of being frank and not being excited...
God...
As we enter our Batman barrage here, the first thing I want to get your guys' impression of real quickly, and let's just hit all of these real quick. What did you think of the Frank Miller interview in The Hollywood Reporter?
Didn't read it, wasn't interested.
I thought it was badass. It's good to, I haven't heard Frank Miller interviewed before. It was just cool to see what that guy's like. I really liked the graphic novel 300. The movie, by the way, the awesomeness of the movie owes a lot of it, not all, of course, but a lot of its awesomeness to the original work, 300.
Right, and of course we've covered Zack Snyder, the influence of Frank Miller on Zack Snyder and their relationship to each other. What I found hilarious about this interview is how he basically didn't participate in the interview. He just sort of rejected all the questions and was like, no, that's a stupid question.
Yeah, he did. No, I didn't notice that. That's totally, like, what he did.
Yeah. So it's like, no wonder no one interviews you, Frank Miller. And then also the fact that he pointed out that he was going to make Batman with Darren Aronofsky, and, like, Aronofsky wanted Batman to be, like, homeless, living on the street. It just reaffirmed to me how evil of a filmmaker Aronofsky is.
Yes, God.
Next piece of Batman news. As we move forward to Ben Affleck, we get a little self-reflection on the last Batman, Christian Bale, who was disappointed in his Batman performances. He particularly said that he got utterly destroyed by Heath Ledger, because Heath Ledger came in the second movie and just everything he was doing, Heath Ledger made look bad. So do you agree with Christian Bale, or is he being hypercritical? Was Christian Bale not a good enough Batman?
By what standard? I don't understand.
I really liked Christian Bale as a Batman.
Like, I thought his performance was excellent, yeah.
Okay, I mean, then. To the point where, like, I just can't imagine, I actually can't imagine someone other than Christian Bale playing Batman, to be honest. Yeah, it's just, I really haven't watched, I haven't liked any Batman movies other than the Christopher Nolan Batman, so it's just, Christian Bale as Batman, that he is Batman to me. No one else could be. It's beautiful.
So there's a high bar set here, and Christian Bale, stop being so hard on yourselves, on yourself. We like you. And you know who else we like? Zack Snyder. Did you guys take a look at this article, Zack Snyder's Superhero Life?
I didn't have to, because you quoted every line of it to me in our chat window. Because
I was reading it.
This line is great. This line is great. This line is great. This line is great.
Everything about it was awesome. Like, Warner Brothers was going to, like, destroy a whole, like, studio building or something, and he just took it over and basically made his Batcave / Fortress of Solitude, where he put in, like, weights and everything. I don't know. The guy just, like, lives an ideal life. It's pretty incredible.
Man crush. Maybe just crush at this point.
Did anything stand out to you guys about it, or did you literally not read it?
I mean, I like that Zack Snyder, despite what people say about him, thinks about things in a conceptual manner. He's not just about explosions and special effects. He wants to communicate something with the visuals, which I think people do not get, because they don't want to get it out of Zack Snyder films. Or maybe they do get it and they reject it explicitly because it's not the things they would project.
Yeah, and people just aren't seeing it. I mean, when you look at what they said about Sucker Punch, I mean, Elliot pointed this out in the chat. This points out the way people see Snyder. Sucker Punch was described as a 2011 flop about a mental patient who fantasizes she's a member of a group of prostitutes who battles orcs, zombie soldiers, and giant samurai. That is never how I would think to describe Sucker Punch ever in my entire life.
Right. Review that you just read is the reason I haven't watched that movie yet. Because when I read that, I'm like, ah, that doesn't sound very good.
No, that sounds awful. That sounds horrendous. I would not watch that movie.
Yeah. Even if it was directed by Zack Snyder?
Well, I would if it was directed by Zack Snyder, because I would know they missed something.
Yes, absolutely. That's a disgusting description of that movie, but...
All right. So let's move on. Let's finish this section with an Entertainment Weekly reporter. It says he's a senior writer here who covers Star Wars, DC, Marvel, and more. He tweeted out about he saw Batman versus Superman. His name is Anthony Bresnikan. This is on his Twitter. He apparently, to make tweets longer, people tweet pictures of what they want to say.
Yes.
Which kind of defeats the purpose of Twitter, but whatever.
By the way, which is why Twitter is removing their 140 character limit soon.
That ought to go well. So he had 6 points about Batman versus Superman. He said, one, if you love Man of Steel, you'll love Batman versus Superman. I think that's pretty much what we expect, yes?
Yeah.
Two, if you loved Man of Steel but not the end, Batman versus Superman may redeem that. Again, that's what we expected, correct?
Pretty much.
This is referring to the whole battle of Metropolis and how that's going to become a plot point at the beginning. If you hated Man of Steel and the whole grim/dark thing, okay, probably not for you. Again, I never saw Man of Steel as dark and grim. We talk about that on the episode we're about to release about Man of Steel in the Snyder series. Four, Wonder Woman is fearsome. That's good to hear. Five, there's a moment between Batman and Superman that'll make even the most cynical eye tear up a little. All right, I'm going to be crying the whole movie now. And six, fans will have a lot to discuss and fight over. So did this review actually reveal anything, or is this all everything we've been telling people already?
I don't think it revealed anything. I think this is the kind of review that comes out when you have like an embargo on reviews, which is, I can't give you plot points, specific details. I can't give you even generalized ups and downs. I can just sort of tell you broad strokes.
And how you'll react, basically. This is how you will react. This is it's like releasing an image of someone's face as they watch the movie.
And I think he's accurate in all these things, but I think you could have probably said that as we have weeks before seeing the movie.
Right.
So I'm not sure what's new here.
He's just putting it together for people who aren't thinking about it too hard.
So those of you who come and visit the Midside often, you're ahead of the curve here with Zack Snyder News. So thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it. Tell a friend. Let's move on to our final segment. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA blows, Steam rocks, got risk for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit, mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit, no we didn't post it, but we will repost it. Now this first Reddit had a hilarious response when James messaged us and was like, what is it with waffles? Because this first Reddit is, today I fucked up by calling a kid a waffle. And this is a story that supposedly actually happened. So I'm going to read this story from Reddit.
The whole thing?
I can't see why, not how, but why you would make this up. Go ahead. Just
fine, I'm not
going to
read the whole
story.
Thing because Daniel doesn't want to hear it. But basically the point is, at one point this person yells his favorite insult. You are a rude waffle, a crusty pancake with square holes.
Oh my god.
And the person turned around and looked him in the eyes and retaliated with, this is why nobody fucking loves you. And then he gets in trouble for calling her a waffle, even though that person sweared at her or whatever. I don't know if it's her, I don't know the genders, whatever. But person one gets in trouble for calling person two a waffle, even though person two retaliated by saying, nobody fucking likes you.
Isn't this though?
This
I mean, it's kind of
to
funny.
The dean and everything.
But isn't this like the feminazi chick on Twitter who called you a goofball? Like, you know what she meant, right?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
But that's even more her, so. Like, waffle like doesn't have the same amount of syllables in anything, right? But like, goofball is like asshole. Goofball. It's like, fuck you. You're not even that clever. But at least waffle is fucking funny.
We know what he meant.
Hey,
James, that laugh.
Hey, Justin, you're such a card. You're such a plastic. You're such a, yeah, see, I can call someone random words too.
Yes, you have that ability, James. No, compliment.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Say the insult again. The food one.
Oh, I closed it.
Jesus Christ. You don't. He said,
a crusty pancake.
You just derailed the entire.
A crusty pancake.
Move on.
Holes.
I'm done. I'm not even giving you my point. Audience, you've been deprived
holes.
Of my point by bad hosting. Just want you to know that.
The website's down?
What?
There were,
what are you talking about?
You said bad hosting.
Jesus. Motherfucker. What are you on? That is the worst joke you have ever made.
It took me a while to even understand a joke had just
it's
happened.
It's such a bad joke. Wow. The website is down?
Joke-ception.
Really?
What are you doing in my field?
Oh my god.
I can't breathe right
please,
now.
Please tweet at the mid-site and tell them that was fucking ridiculous and to never do that again. That was horrible. I'm most offended by how bad that joke was.
You crusty pancake with holes.
God.
Next Reddit. Oh my. What was the first thing you got really into?
Your mom.
Oh!
No, literally, we were all in our mom. I don't... What's the humor?
Well, you didn't get into that. Getting into
were
it,
you really,
you weren't
were you
into
really...
It.
Were you really into it? Like, man, this womb is the best.
It's a play on words! Fucking...
The website is down?
People, yes. The answer is clear for me, and if anyone could guess it, which is easy as hell, it's Star Wars. I was
food.
Obsessed with Star Wars. Good one. Good one. Mm-hmm. Hilarious you are. It was Star Wars cake, is what it was. Primarily.
For James.
For me, I can't remember which came first, because I was so young. It was either Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Of course.
Who's now some liberal tard, which was really disappointing to hear. Or Navy SEALs. Like, cause I remember watching this documentary about, and you know, it's that really serious guy on the History Channel. The Navy SEALs will spend over 30 minutes in water that is already frozen. And like, you know, just stuff like this. And I just thought, oh my God, those guys are so awesome. And so I'd think about them all the time. And they tell everyone, like, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And they're like, fuck you, kid. Shut up.
This is James' entire personality in a nutshell, by the way. Obsessed with Bill Nye and Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Pretty much.
That is James. Justin, what were you into early?
You would never guess this.
Asian porn?
No. I was into the Ghostbusters animated series.
Well, that was a good animated series.
I had all the action figures. I had the station. I had all the Ecto-1 and everything. I had it all.
I had the Ecto-1. I didn't have much else. I used to put my Ninja Turtles in the Ecto-1. Multiverse.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right.
What drew you... No. We're going to explore this. Your therapist needs to know. What drew you to the world of people busting ghosts?
I don't know. It was cool.
Okay, moving on.
What's not cool about the Ghostbusters? Like, they use, like, electronic, like, lights to, like, capture ghosts. Like, it's cool for a kid, you know what I mean?
Well, I guess none of them are getting laid, but alright.
I was a kid. And there were no
at least Raphael
Ghostbusters.
At least Raphael was hitting that. With April.
Not in the new movies, anyway. Last Reddit. Another mildly interesting for Daniel.
Yes.
This machine will scan your face and 3D print you as a Star Wars or Marvel action figure. And this what they're linking to is a picture. It's a machine called Super Awesome Me. and it's in a lot of targets, and they use a Kinect sensor to scan you, and then they 3D print that. They send the data somewhere, and they print it, and they send you an action figure.
That's only mildly interesting to people on the internet? What the fuck, internet? Are your pleasure centers burned out? That is a custom action figure.
Oh, it's mildly interesting, I guess.
I actually have one of these.
I know you do. Not the machine.
But. No, I wish I had it. Well, I actually have one of those, too, though. So there's a story with that. So the first thing is, when this first came out, they were only in Sam's Club. And by the way, these are only in California, so fuck you, rest of the country. So I immediately went to Sam's Club and paid $90 to have my face pasted on an Iron Man action figure. Because I'm a sucker. But here's the thing.
Sounds like you.
You know how this uses a Kinect sensor?
Yes.
I've actually done this years before for free, but without the 3D printing. So, as we've told the story before, the Oculus Rift comes out of the lab at USC that our friend works with, right?
Yes.
Well,
the doctor.
Right. This same friend I lived with, and he used to call me into his room when he tried to figure things out and needed a guinea pig, and I was the one who would be the guinea pig. So he had previously, way before this technology was out, 3D scanned my face into his computer with his Kinect.
Is this why you're afraid of guinea pigs?
No, and so I showed him this, and I go, can you please stop passing up ideas to be rich and start patenting things?
To which he was like, no, science! And then he disappeared into a poof of quantum goo.
Well, no, what he actually did show me this time was he was like, well, actually, I'm a step ahead of that, and I'm using the Kinect and other proprietary technology in order to 3D scan people's avatars. So everyone will have avatars of themselves in the computer. And I looked at, and I didn't look at him, but I emailed him back, and I said, you better have goddamn patented that. And he sent me back, he linked me to the patent. So, finally, he may actually get rich off of one of these ideas.
Hooray! A rich friend!
A richer friend, because he works for school in academia. All right.
I'm also a Richard's friend, but...
What did we learn this week, gentlemen? Daniel?
I learned that Justin's afraid of guinea pigs.
You can't make... Stop trying to make fetch happen, Gretchen. It's not going to happen.
I learned that a pegging unicorn is a unicock. That's what I learned.
James?
I learned that Justin told a joke.
That was what I learned.
We attempted to tell a joke. It was fairly shitty.
No, like I learned it, like I had to, like, it's like I didn't just become aware of it, you know, the way you normally become aware that a joke happened, like just when you laugh, but like I had to use inference to learn the fact that a joke was told.
That's how good he is, folks.
Okay, I just got this is what I learned. I just got texted an article. Did we cover this before? Somebody texted me an article, sleep is sexist? Let her sleep in. Women need more sleep than men, says science.
No, that's funny. You know what?
We did
sleep is racist. Yes. Yes. No, that's interesting. Sleep is also sexist.
If women need more sleep, why are men always the one who want to sleep after sex and women are like, no, let's talk. Fuck, if you need your sleep, just go to fucking sleep. I knocked you out already. I hit you in the head with my giant penis. Like, why are you awake?
That's some kinky shit you're into. I don't know what's going on in your bedroom, but alas. Jeez. If you enjoy clubbing, why don't you tell us on Facebook at facebook.com/themidside, where we are now sharing various images that are quotes from the show, and it has worked marvelously well. I think we've added 5% to our page. We're up to over 100 now. That's right. There's more than 100 of you that listen to this show. That's incredible. And in fact, we recently learned that we are doing quite well with the listenership. But not to brag, but we are reaching tens of people every week. So
shout out to the Liberty.me audience. We thank you for tuning in every week.
Thank you for helping us grow, and we hope you enjoy our bizarre commentary and that you tell a friend about it. You can also, if you want to support us, you can go to twitter.com/TheMidSide or themidside.com/podcast. And then, of course, man, where would we be without our Patreon supporters?
Patreon.
You know what we'd be? We'd be dead in the gutter like Mozart or Edgar Allan Poe. We'd be penniless and broke and alcoholics. But it's the Patreon supporters who keep us living and breathing drug users. Yes.
That's right, Patreon. You really just help us keep the lights on, you know? I mean, this show requires so many lights. I mean, every light in my house is on right now. I'm so glad that we have our Patreon, and I mean that in the most condescending way possible. It's just, that sounded so condescending the way I said that.
Patreon.com. Don't. Patreon.com/TheMidSide. You can choose to donate real money per piece of content. So not every month where we decide, yeah, we're taking this fucking month off and we're going to rake in that Patreon dough. No. We have to produce content. And then every time we produce content, you give us, you throw a few shekels our way.
Are you ready for
is
a
shekels
callback?
Racist?
No.
Shekels sounds racist.
No.
Okay.
Are you ready
What's
for
the
callback?
Callback?
If you
what?
Support our Patreon, there won't be bad hosting.
Jesus.
Because it helps pay for the website.
Fucking give it up. Wow. Wow. Very terrible joke.
Dance.
Justin makes Patreon subscribers take away $5. So.
Hey, would you like to take away $5 from us per show?
We owe you money, in fact.
I'm going to end this before this gets worse.
No,
right?
No. A couple more things. No, I'm still shilling. Tell a friend. We tell you that every week, but seriously, if you tell one friend, and then that friend tells another friend, and that friend tells another friend, we'll have gained 5 listeners, because you don't have that many friends. But that helps us grow, it really does. It helps us move up in the iTunes ranks, it helps us move up in against the fucking, our new rival, the Midvale, whatever it is, Night Vale.
Welcome to Night Vale.
Yeah, fuck them. Exactly. We're welcoming to the Midside, not to Night Vale. So, tell a friend, and then next week, are you ready for it? Snyder series next week on The Man of Fucking Steel. That's right. So be on the lookout for that. Tell your friends, and let us know what you think. Everywhere. See ya.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into The Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Yay!
James, did you know that the original name for this podcast in its very first inception was Pop Punk, Culture, and Pop Tarts?
Yeah, it was Pop Culture, Pop Punk, and Pop Tarts.
That's literally what
a
I
lot
just
of
said.
Pop. Not was your pop proud?
We ate
yeah.
corn pops while doing it.
A lot mm-hmm. of pop.
Okay.
We drank soda in the Midwest.